Today is Sunday, May 2nd, 2021. This is part 12 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart, last name spelled H-A-G-G-A-R-T. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Tom. It's a beautiful day here in Vancouver.
Great.
Hope it's nice down there in Flag, too.
It is. A little breezy, but the tulips are up, and it's very nice. May we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Last time in part 11, you talked about doing some hikes in 1996, in the fall of 96, and then in the fall of, in the spring of 97, April, you headed out on your next hike. Can you pick that thread up?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I talked last couple of interviews, I guess, or maybe it's just specifically the last one, but we've talked about how Art and Art Christensen and Bruce Grubbs and myself started doing our initial explorations out onto the Esplanade out west of Great Thumb Mesa.
Right.
And, you know, it was kind of, as I mentioned in earlier talks, right, it was really a terra incognita to us. There was very little information that we had on this, even in the 90s, right? We had Harvey's notes, but he didn't really cover a whole lot of ground out there, right? And so it was kind of surprising, and the fact that he hadn't been out there, you know, it was kind of like, oh my God, it must be really intimidating or something, you know, it must be really challenging to get around. I don't know, we just didn't know a heck of a lot of information about it, and you know, we didn't really understand water sources out there, you know, what was available, and
right.
So anyways, we started these trips, and we had taken the one trip that we talked about last week into the drainage of 140 mile, and the three of us, and we got a taste of the Esplanade, you know, and it was a lot nicer than we imagined. It was really fantastic, beautiful walking, you know, and in fact, you know, you just you work your way through difficulties here and there, like getting down to the Esplanade.
Mm-hmm.
But once you're on it, you can go for miles and days, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like this quite often just open, bare, flat sandstone slabs to walk across, and it's just like walking down city sidewalks, you know, with your backpack on. So we were getting really, really jazzed about that area, and we planned this nice trip, big trip, that we're going to talk about now, around Great Thumb Mesa. So what we wanted to do was to kind of drop down the Enfilade Point route from the rim down to the Esplanade bench that sits above the Red Wall in the area where Art and I had come up the previous year.
Right.
We had done that trip down through Stephen Isle and Conquistador Isle down to past Forster, and we come up the Red Wall there, and then followed the Esplanade back to the South Bass Trail. So,
mm-hmm.
Or that area. I guess we went out Point Weitzel that time. You know, the idea was to go down now from the rim and connect with that route so that we had a connection there, and then proceed north on the Esplanade around Fast Fossil Bay and then below Great Thumb Point and then out onto the terraces out to the west of Great Thumb Point. So it was pretty ambitious. And we had like 10 days, I think, for this. Maybe, like, I don't remember exactly how many days. It might have been 8. But, you know, we piled into – we were probably in our Subaru. He's always had a Subaru that, you know, we've – capitalized on for our transport to the canyon, and you know, found the route down off of the rim there. It's pretty straightforward.
So to get there, you would have had to drive almost to the south rim, and again, this is sans permit, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So then you would turn on the past the Moki Lodge.
Right.
Moqui. past the Moki Lodge, and then head on the dirt road, cross the Grand Canyon Railroad train line, and then head west, quite a ways past the Pasture Wash Ranger Station,
That's right,
which
yeah.
was an abandoned building there that hadn't been occupied for, oh gosh, 20 years at least, maybe 30.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure, right.
And then continue on west onto the Havasupai, Havasupai, Indian Reservation land, out toward the Great Thumb Mesa Deer Trail Road. Is that right? I'm trying to get out to the Enfilade Point route.
That's right. You've got it nailed perfectly. So you basically, it's like you're driving to Topocoba Hilltop. So you drive out towards Pasture Wash there, and then pass through the reservation boundary. Sometimes there's people there, but mostly there aren't. When I say people, I mean natives who are checking for your access permits. We've never actually run into anybody there, but I understand that sometimes there are personnel there. And then you basically turn right off the road as it descends down the drainage towards Topocoba Hilltop, and you can drive then up onto the Great Thumb Mesa Deer Trail, I'm sorry, Jeep Trail. And it's pretty straightforward going, except that there's a couple on that Jeep Trail, but there's a couple of places where there's some ledges. And I know that on this particular trip, we weren't able, our Subaru wasn't able to make it up the big ledge. It's about a 30-degree incline. It's really fairly impressive. And even with all-wheel drive on the Subaru, he wasn't able to negotiate it. So we parked there. And so this is about, I'm thinking we're about 4 miles from the junction with the Topocoba Hilltop Road. And so heading north, right? And so we had a little bit of a walk to go, but not too far to get to this descent down from the rim. And it's just a really a neat descent because you work your way down a slot in the Coconino right off the rim, just a fairly straightforward drop down an angling slope behind a big block. And you get to the Toro Weep, and then you follow the Toro Weep around for about a mile to the north, close to the edge in places of the drop over the Coconino, and then eventually there's a neat little down climb through the Coconino that takes you down to the Esplanade. So this was a budget route. I mean, this was nothing new. We weren't breaking new ground with this route.
Right.
We knew this had been done, and this could go. We just had to find the way, right? So, so we get down onto the Esplanade, and this, of course, it's beautiful walking, right? And somewhat slow. I remember going around Fossil Bay wasn't the fastest Esplanade walking. I'm not
Fossil
sure.
Bay is huge.
Yeah, it
It's
is.
just
It is for
miles
sure.
in and miles out just
Yeah.
to cross the drainage, to get around the drainage.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And let's see. I think we camped at. We camped on the west side of Fossil, but short of the head. So it took us basically, most of a day to. And we had camped somewhere on the rim that the previous night. So it took us most of a day to negotiate the descent and then the traverse of the Esplanade heading towards the head of Fossil.
Was
And there's.
it was nine was this in 1897? Was this a wet winter? Was there water out on the Esplanade in the water pockets?
Yeah, well, that's definitely something I'm going to get to, right? Because that's what makes the Esplanade so splendid are these fantastic water pockets. But you got to time that right, and we didn't know what to expect with water pockets, right? We weren't 100% clear on that. So, we had capacity to carry lots of water between what where we expected to be able to get it. So, So when we the next day we got up and then walked to the head of Fossil, and what we wanted to do here was to go down, hopefully to the river, right?
Ooh.
And that would have been another Redwall route for me to do. And so Bruce decided he wasn't going to have any of that. He wasn't interested in that. And so Art and I started down, and you know, there's some. I think you've probably done it because it would be a natural hike from up from the river.
Yes, but you run into this narrows with a pool full of water and a chalk stone on the up drainage side of the pool.
Yeah.
And it's winter when we've been there, and it's cold, and we're like, yeah, I'm going to take off all my clothes and swim through that. I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're there in April, right?
Okay.
And so you know, it was quite nice. It was very nice. And so we didn't mind swimming, and I've got good pictures of Art in the water here. And and there's a spectacular Redwall pitch, you know, where on the river left of the drainage, on the east side of the drainage. To get down, I think above that pool, you had to do this face climb, and I remember coming up onto this, and you know, when you're looking over the edge, you don't know what you're getting into, and I remember it's pretty exposed, and there goes Art, you know, he starts backing down this thing, and you know, for sure, you know, the ledges are there, the holds are there, and you just got to be very careful, right, and aware of things, and it's straightforward, but you know, when you don't know that's the route, you know, it takes a little bit of nerve to push that through, right? So yeah, he certainly is a strong hiker in that respect. So you know, he basically found that, and then we proceeded down, and we got through that pool, and at that point, we just didn't know whether it was going to pan out anymore. So I don't know why we turned around, but we
Oh,
didn't
no
go to the
kidding.
river.
No
No.
kidding. That was it. That was the crux move. You had just finished
Yeah.
it right there.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that Art, he you know, he flies a lot. He used to fly a lot up there. And so he said subsequent to this trip, he had flown over that area and looked down, and he could see, you know, where we had gotten to.
Oh, my.
And that we were, it was just a straight run from there down to the river,
Yeah,
you know.
gosh. Because you
So.
come up, you go up this wide open drainage, and then it finally necks in the Redwall, and you go into this, I don't know, 50-yard, 100-yard section of really kind of getting really prettier and prettier Redwall narrows, and then pff, you're at this pool. You know, you make this dog leg turn, and you walk right into this pool, and you guys said, clear the pool. Oh,
Yeah,
gosh.
exactly. So, you know, so that's a there's something I got to do.
Okay.
And you know, it's like I've often thought about how to finish that off, and there is a quicker route down from the rim into Fossil, pretty much near the head of it, right? So that would be the obvious way in, would be to just walk as far, you know, along the Jeep trail there as you have to go down to hit that drop, and then
Or
go.
do a river trip and just hike up from the river.
Well, that's it exactly. I mean, that's the most
Oh gosh.
logical
Yeah.
option, but I just don't have too many
Right.
too many opportunities to get on a river trip, let alone stop in Fossil Canyon so I can make a, you know, 4-hour round trip day
To
hike or
walk up
something.
there. Yeah, right.
So, but anyways, you know, we had to get up, and you know, we had our objective was to do the circumnavigation of Great Thumb. It wasn't to,
Right.
you know,
Get to the
push through
river
all
from,
these Redwall
yeah.
routes. So we had to turn around at a certain point, and that was our turnaround point. We headed back up and rejoined Bruce, and then continued, you know, to do the traverse. So I remember we had a and that was actually, yeah, we had another camp then on the east side of Fossil, pretty near the head
Okay.
on the Esplanade Rim, right? Because that between getting to the head of Fossil and then our adventure going down, Art and I, through the Redwall, we had eaten up a fair part of the day. So we basically camped on the east side of Fossil on the Esplanade. And then the next morning we started the long traversing, right? It's just hiking, right? And it was
Yeah.
just fantastic. So we hiked out and right out to the Supai Rim above the mouth of Fossil, you know. And look down on that. I've got some pictures of Art sitting on the edge, you know, quite literally sitting on the edge of the Subai. This would be Esplanade Sandstone, with, you know, hundreds of feet, the lowest feet. You know, he's just sitting there dangling, and his feet, and great shots, right? Great shots, with Stanton Point rising behind him, and the North Rim off in the distance, and yeah, spectacular picture. So, and then, you know, we just started walking the Esplanade, and I was particularly interested in the area around Spectre Chasm. And the reason was because Harvey had described in his notes how he walked the Red Wall Rim from Fossil towards Spectre, and he had a fall on that hike. This was a day hike thing that he had tried solo, and my recollection of his notes was that he had a fall partway along there, and came back. So he didn't get all the way into Spectre, but you know, he had an idea that the Red Wall might go in Spectre.
He was right.
Yeah, that's what you told me a few weeks ago, and that's really exciting news.
It's interesting that I didn't know that he was trying it at the top of the Red Wall, but he was coming at it from Fossil. I'm assuming that you can clear the drainage of Spectre coming from the south, because you have to be on the north side. You have to clear the drainage all the way back to the north corner, and that's where the route is. So he would have
Okay.
had quite a ways to go.
Yeah, okay. So, well, we'll have to maybe someday you can sketch out on a map, you know, where that route goes. I'd be very curious to know, because I spent a lot of time with the binoculars trying to find a route down through the Supai to connect with
I
that.
think it's a couple miles to the north.
Okay.
So you're on the north side of Spectre.
Yeah.
This Red Wall nose goes up through the Red Wall, and then you have to walk the top of the Red Wall north again, in and out and in and out of some small tributaries until you find a break in the Supai that goes up to the Esplanade where you and Art and Bruce were.
Right. So, you know somebody who's done all that? Have you done all that yourself?
I don't know anybody who's done it yet, but there's a couple of people working on it because it basically the top of the Red Wall, there's a large roasting pit there, clear signs of indigenous people's occupations. So, you know, they don't walk into dead ends for nothing. So it's fairly clear there's a way to do it. I just am not sure how to piece that last bit together.
Right. Well, I'm sure you'll figure it out. And but you know, keep in mind when you're out there that I was also putting my glasses on the Coconino and Kaibab north of Stanton Point, and it looked to me like there were potential you know, definitely things to try up there.
Well, if all else fails, you go around to the Tohuta Point route, but and that works. So that gets you from the river at Spectre to the rim at the very, you know, point of the Great Thumb Mesa, which is pretty neat in that area.
Yeah. I mean, it's just such spectacular views. You know, you're just walking along the edge of the Esplanade, and you're looking in places like right down on the river. You know, and
Thousands of feet below.
you just can't. Yeah, you just can't beat it. And so we were really, you know, jazzed to be experiencing all this. And so that was, you know, that was cool to spend the time looking into Spectre and kind of dreaming about the opportunities. Of course, this is 19, you know, 97, and here it is. We're, you know, 24 years later, and I still haven't gone back to check this out, right?
And I haven't finished it off. We were there in, oh gosh, maybe when was it? 2000? No, it was 2006 or 2007 that we did that route. I haven't done it. Don't know anybody who's connected it to the rim yet. So there's still things out there to be done.
Oh, yeah, for sure,
And
for
of
sure.
course, all we're doing is following the indigenous peoples because they did it long ago.
That's right. You know, you
So,
never lose sight of that, for sure. Yeah, that's well, that would be so cool to see that roasting pit at the top of the Red Wall
it's
there.
pretty
So,
stunning. Yeah, it's like, here it is. This is the way to go. And we're taking a break here and we're making dinner. And then we're going to, you know, carry on. So it's a multi-day route.
Well, so on this trip, we did have one logistical issue, right? And it was a we were wondering how difficult it would be to get around the big bay that's on the north side of Great Thumb Point. And the reason I say this is because Larry Bruce had traversed, had done this hike, part of this hike himself with Larry Treiber.
Okay.
I'd say in the late 70s, and they had actually hiked from Bass, I'm sorry, from Supai, all along the Esplanade to Bass Trail. Okay,
Okay.
so for Bruce, a lot of this was not new
Right.
because he had hiked the Esplanade in a straightforward way, you know, no side trips or anything like that.
Okay.
And when they went around this big bay, it's essentially the bay of 135 mile creek or rapids.
It's Owl Eyes Bay.
Yeah, Owl Eyes, exactly. And where there was, you know, a tragic accident there right around that time, I
Right.
think. And so the two of them had a very bad remembrance of getting around that bay. And so we were, you know, we didn't figure it was gonna potentially stop us. We didn't think that, but we were just a little nervous, a little apprehensive what might be there, right? And I think that the young lady had actually slipped a year or two before this. I don't remember the date on that. But anyways, you know that this young woman was on a backpack trip through there with, I guess, her partner, and she wound up taking a slip, and so that kind of was, and it was fatal. And we, whether we had that information or not, it was still kind of an ominous little place. And so when we worked our way over to the east side of it, we could see, you know, the traverse of the bay, and we figured, well, we're just going to have to do it, you know. And it was actually a piece of cake, you know. It was one of those situations where everything works out perfect, you know. There's enough deer trails. The ground is dried out, so it's not slippery mud, you know. You can count on these dirt ledges maintaining their integrity when you put your foot down on them, and it just was very straightforward. So we zipped around that bay very quickly, and we were referring to it as a play on Spectre Chasm. We were calling it Sphincter Abyss, right? Because of, you know, how it made Larry and Bruce kind of clench up all their muscles, right? You know, to and call up their courage when they passed through there, you know, 20 years prior. And so we were referring to it as Sphincter Abyss, and actually it, you know, we passed it quite easily. So
It's
that was
a really fascinating place, and I've been out there in the summer when getting through there was fairly easy. You know, the dirt was dirt and the rock was rock and you didn't have to worry about it. But when that fatality happened that you were talking about, it was winter, or it was just starting into spring, and that north facing bay had not thawed out yet. And I can't imagine trying to get through there when it's icy.
Oh, that would be terrible, yeah.
It would be terrifying. And what's really interesting about this small little amphitheater of a bay is it's not only two-footed species that have trouble in there, but the four-footed species to the west, horses and the wild burros that are on the Esplanade to the west, they get stopped by that bay. And there's no fence, but it's too steep for them.
Interesting, yeah. That's a good point.
It's a really fascinating natural block for large four-footed creature migration.
Right. Huh.
Yeah.
There's no routes up from below now in there, are
Not
you?
that I know of.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
okay.
say that there's not, but I just don't know of them.
Right,
Up
yeah.
to the Red Wall. The Red Wall's pretty tough down there.
Yeah, it's all very, very vertical, so.
Yeah. But so you guys were finding water. Of course, you had water down in Fossil down at the pool down there, but you were finding water on the Esplanade. It was no problem when you were there.
Yeah, so at this point, you know, it was April, right? And
Okay.
I don't remember the meteorological conditions of that spring or anything, but we kept running into water pockets,
Great.
and you know, I remember that there were just a few on the east side of Great Thumb, and relatively small, right? But when we hit when we went out on the west side of Great Thumb, like to Tahuta Terrace, they're huge, expansive lakes. You know, these water pockets. It's just unbelievable to see these things. You know, and so we camped that night at on the Esplanade, just past Sphincter Abyss, right,
okay.
Below Tahuta Point.
Okay.
And there's mezcal pits around there, you know, and I remember Art found some beautiful points.
Mm-hmm.
And but he, you know, he just puts them back, and
uh-huh.
and we carry on, you know. And the two of them, in the afternoon, they said, we're going to sit here and relax in our camp. And I said, well, I want to go up and see if I can get up to Tahuta Point.
Okay.
And so I ran up there because we were just north of Tahuta Point. And this is not the trail, right, around to the west side. This was actually Tahuta Point itself.
Oh, okay.
And from below, it looked like, well, from below you can see that the Coconino Talus goes quite high up.
Right.
Almost to the... through the Coconino, and I thought, well, let's go give it a try and see if the actual Coke itself is low angle enough to maybe make it up. And so I ran up there, and it was late in the day. I didn't have a whole lot of time, and I got to the top of the talus, and there was, if there's a way, it's beyond me, right? So you referred to the Tahuta Point route just a few minutes ago. And I'd be very curious as to whether you were actually referring to this particular break.
No.
Okay.
No, we were referring to the regular built trail and locations on the west side.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Well, we knew about that route.
Right.
And because we had actually, you know, taken it on the way out on our previous trip, right, in that area. So we knew about that route, but I just thought, well, it'd be really cool to find another, you know, native route down from the rim in this vicinity, because, you know, again, right where we were camping, there were these beautiful mezcal pits and all these points.
Yep.
And so obvious occupation. And how did they get there? So anyways, it, you know, make a long story short, I poked around and, you know, tried to do what I could. And then I went, an adjacent talus cone just to the west, and I kind of walked along or scrambled along the base of the Coconino Cliff over to that talus cone and tried to get up there too, and neither route panned out, so I had to run back down and meet the guys down at camp. So so that was, you know, a lot of fun, though. I mean, I love just doing these efforts to try and, you know, find new routes. So
Can you describe the view you saw looking north?
From there, I guess you'd be looking right into Deer Creek, basically.
Right, exactly.
And,
Deer Creek waterfall down there, and you can see Tepetz Creek, the mouth of Steamboat Mountain is off to the east-northeast. And
oh, it's spectacular.
It's
no
just
question.
A gorgeous view.
Yeah, I'm not sure from our camp we couldn't actually see a Deer Creek Falls because, our camp was kind of back on the Esplanade from the rim of the rim of the Esplanade.
Right.
So, you know, we would have had to somehow see over that
walk
rim.
Out there. Yeah.
But we definitely had the expansive views at Esplanade level, right? And certainly to Steamboat Mountain, as you pointed out, you know, and you could see the gash of Kanab Creek, bisecting the plateau and Fishtail Mesa's up there.
Right.
So, you know, it's just
to the northwest.
It's just a spectacular area. And we did actually get some, in the next couple of days, we walked out onto these points on these terraces, and we got these spectacular views down into the gorge, and we could see, you know, at some point you could even see people in boats, right, going through. So,
right.
It was pretty exciting, and so we camped at that site with the roasting pits and the points, and the next day was basically a day hike. So we wanted to go out onto the headland or the point that's way out to the north west end of Tahuta Terrace.
Okay.
So this looks directly down on Fishtail Canyon, okay?
Got it.
And it's on the east side of 140 Mile Canyon.
Yes.
And so there's a little Supai prominence out there, a little block that would just be on the west side, northwest side of the fault, okay, that transects through the region there.
That's the Sinyala fault.
That's right.
Sinyela.
It's two L's, I think. Sinyella.
Okay.
I think. I mean, I know.
I don't have my map with me. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, on the map, it's Sinyala. On the map I've got, it's always called Sinyala, Sinyala Mesa, and Sinyala Creek. But I know in more recent maps, I guess it may be Sinyala. I've seen that spelling referred to, I think, more commonly recently. So somebody's probably done some etymological work on that name and refined that a bit. But anyways, we decided to hike out to Tahuta Terrace, and this is where, remember, it was a fairly chilly morning, but brilliant sunshine, you know. And this is where we started coming across these huge lakes. I mean, you know, you talk about water pockets. These are water lakes. I mean, they're just expansive. You know, if they froze over, you could ice skate on them, right? They were just huge, like 40, 50 feet across in diameter, you know. And of course, it's not just one big round pool. It's got all this intricate topography, right?
Right.
Because the sandstone surface has kind of weathered in irregular humps and whatnot. And so there's just, you know, to see all this water in an area that looks so dry from.
And 6 inches deep at the deepest?
Oh, in places deeper than that.
Okay.
Yeah, but most of the time it's like two to 3 inches deep, right? Very, very, very thin. And you know, so you can see that these things dry up. You know, a couple of weeks, they're going to be gone, right, if they're not replenished in
right.
a rainfall.
Right.
So you have, if you know that there's been rains out in on the Esplanade, you've got a clear signal to go for an extended backpack out there, you know, because you know you're going to run into these water pockets. I mean, I can, it's almost guaranteed, right?
Right.
And it's what makes hiking out there so enjoyable, at least in my mind.
What were you doing for water filtration?
No, you know, a lot of people deal with this in very sophisticated ways.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at that time, we were just filling our containers and
up.
Drinking.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, from a water pocket like that, you know, where very few people are hiking,
right.
I think it's a pretty safe bet that you've got, you know, clean water there.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that we became a little more sensitive to the issue of water quality in our later hikes. I'm talking about Art and Bruce and I,
mm-hmm.
and we started carrying little tablets, right?
Okay.
Initially iodine, and then more sophisticated tablets, chloride tablets that don't leave such a coloration and taste.
Right.
And the reason we started carrying that was not so much because we thought the water was going to be bad, so much as the fact is we didn't want to take a chance on, you know, getting into an extreme situation with Giardia.
Right.
And then not, you know, well, we had the ability to get ourselves out of these things, but you just don't want to get into that situation. So,
right. Nobody
so
wants
we,
to
that,
be sick.
That was the motivation for carrying the water purification. But quite honestly, I've drunk the water everywhere in the canyon and never had a problem with it. Mm. So, you know, Nankweep and without purification, I've done that, and you know, some fairly busy areas. Now, I wouldn't fill up my water bottle at the campsite where the Nankweep Trail comes down to Nankweep Creek,
right?
And drink that straight, right? But a few miles up canyon, you know, it's
right.
I don't have any problem with it. But
right.
anyways,
yeah,
that's, you know, with these water pockets on the Esplanade,
right.
no problem. As
right.
far as I'm concerned, you know,
yeah.
just, and you know, the thing is, you can just lay down right at the edge of them, get into a push-up position and put your face down
That's
in
right.
the water and just start sucking
Gulping
it
it
up
down.
like a
Yep.
dog, you
That's
know?
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was. This was really, exciting for us to run into these huge pockets.
Did you see any horses out there or burro at all?
Oh yeah, we did for
Okay.
sure, and certainly at that time the evidence was pretty abundant, you know. And I remember that in the 70s there had been an effort to round up all the burros and the horses.
Right.
And take, farm them off to adoptees and whatnot, and try and get them out of that part of the world, but they're still there, you know.
Yes.
They had obviously missed them because they were still there, and we saw some. I mean, I can't tell you which trip it was when we were out there that we saw horses, but it may have been on multiple trips. I've got that in my notes, of course, but yeah, we definitely saw them out there, and the evidence is there, right? The trails and whatnot. So I don't know what's happened, if there's been another attempt by the Park Service to try and rein them in, but they were certainly commonly there in when we were there in the late 90s. So we went out to that headland and were able to look down on Fishtail. And again, I was thinking, I was thinking, I wonder if there's a way to get down the Sinala Fault, through the
Right,
Red Wall, right? I
right.
mean, so I'm scoping that all out with the binoculars. It looked pretty impossible, right?
Yep.
From my position
We
there.
came up from the river and worked our way up into the cliffs in that little Sinala Fault Block Canyon, and just turned around and went and retreated.
Yeah,
It's pretty
yeah.
grim in there.
God, I'd love to see your map.
Well, yours too. We're
Yeah,
yeah, so
well,
you're
someday we'll
coming
have to
down from the
compare.
top, and I'm coming up from the bottom,
Yeah.
and sometimes we meet and sometimes we don't, and this was one
Yeah.
where we didn't.
Right. So I remember those two guys decided to go straight back the route we hiked out to Houta Terrace, right? Back to where we had stashed our packs. So this we had hiked a little bit in the morning and from our campsite to Houta Terrace and dropped our packs with our overnight gear and then did this day hike, right? And so we were going to camp where we had dropped the packs. And I
Okay.
said, "Well, look, you guys go back if that's the way you want to go, but I'm going to go down and I want to follow the Supai rim, not the Supai rim. I guess it was it would have been the Red Wall rim in 140 mile.
Oh,
So
great.
I worked my way down the Sinala Fault
Right.
to the rim,
Okay.
and then just followed the Red Wall rim up that drainage. And it was just, really long, a really long hike.
Yeah.
And but nice deer trails and probably
Wow.
horse trails. I'm not
Okay.
sure if it was one or the other,
The
but
burro certainly get in there, at that level, top of the Red Wall. I don't know about the horses.
Yeah. Well, I don't know for sure, but I do remember just the beautiful flat walking with the trails, right? It's
Yeah.
just you really make time. And I remember the spring wildflowers,
Oh,
that's
gee.
one thing that's just so prominent in my mind because of all these rains and the open slopes there and lots of sun. The wildflowers were just really splendid in there. And so I wound up, because that was so far to the west of where we had camped, when I, got in upper 140 mile canyon there, I took me some time to get back. And I remember getting back into camp after dark, right? So it was definitely a headlamp ending there, but
Did you poke around and walk down the drainage at all to see if you could go down through the red wall?
well, not that trip, no.
Okay.
No, but that's a subsequent trip. So
Okay.
yeah, we'll get to that at some point.
All
But
right.
I just wanted to go for the hike, right?
Yeah.
And roll out the miles there.
So then
So it
when
was
you were on the red wall edge, and eventually you go right back into the creek bottom. Now you've got to get up through the Esplanade. And when you do that, then you have to walk overland back to the east to get to those guys in base camp.
Yeah, that's
Got it.
right.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was a, you know, that was a, That was a few miles of Esplanade
Yeah.
to get back to meet up with them. So
Okay.
that's why it took me, until after dark to connect. And it wasn't late after dark. I think I was like, half a mile from I
Okay.
could see them to the north, and it was getting just starting to get dark,
Yeah.
right? And you know how it is in the evening at dusk. You can, I at least I find I can get my vision focused in on and still move fairly quickly at that time of day, And so I tend not to put my headlamp on until it's really black,
Right.
because
Right.
I like to manage with the actual ambient light, and rather than
That's right.
the light of the headlamp, which creates shadows and things you can't
It's a
see and
weird
whatnot.
transition if you have your light on when the sun sets and it gets truly dark. There's a weird time in there where it does mess with you, your visual perception of where your feet are going to supposed to hit the ground. It's weird.
So, anyways, a nice long day of day hiking, and that's the beauty of this Esplanade hiking is you get out there, you're on a backpack trip,
Right.
but most of the time your backpack is sitting somewhere and you're off day hiking,
Which is great.
It's a fantastic, yeah. And it's, of course, as I said, it looks so kind of sterile from above, but when you get down there, you find there's so much detail, So, and this the next couple of days on this trip were just fantastic in that respect. So, so we the next day we did put our packs on and we headed south and west along the Esplanade. So we went rounded the head of 140 mile on the Esplanade, and then we decided again that we wanted to hike. Do another day hike, and we wanted to go down and see Keyhole Bridge, right?
Okay.
So we dropped our packs in the vicinity of how do I describe this? It's kind of well, it's not far from the head of 140 Mile on the west side of the drainage.
Right, you
And
catch the Sinala Fault, is that right? Or do you just work your way down that arm of the drainage because it splits there?
well, we no we we're still quite a way short.
Okay.
So, but what we did was we dropped our packs on the Esplanade,
Okay.
and actually this is in an area where there was a lot of evidence of horses, and we actually now that it's coming back to me, this is the night we saw set had such great views of Hale-Bopp,
Oh,
the
wow.
comet, and there were horses that day. We saw horses there,
Okay.
but we dropped our packs. So this is I'm not it's still quite a ways from the Sinala Fault. But then we day hiked out and over to the Sinala Fault, where it transects across Gatagama Terrace. So between Olo and 140 Mile, we went to that neck,
Okay.
and from there you can then work your way down the Red Wall to the rim above Keyhole Bridge.
Okay.
And
Walking to the east then, or
yeah.
northeast.
I mean, there's
Okay.
there's some scrambling and some down climbs that you have to negotiate,
Okay.
but the fault gully goes through all the supai there, and you get to you're above Keyhole Bridge.
Right,
So
right.
we found the big ammo box there that I guess P.T. Riley
Yeah.
had put in. I'm not
I
sure.
think that's right.
Yeah, and with names of various people who'd been down there. There weren't too many that I recollect.
Okay.
But just, really neat place to be in geologically. And so it was and of course I don't read about Keyhole as a hiking destination, and I had come up to it from below when I was on the river trip with Doug Rickard,
Okay.
and he and I actually hiked up from the river, and to just as not as far as we could have gone. I guess we probably could have gone another couple hundred feet, I guess. But anyways, I'd come up from below, and so it was a really neat experience to come in and see the bridge from above,
Nice.
and we're just hanging out there again. It's a nice bright sunny April day, like probably 60 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that. Not too warm. And then we just kind of walked the Red Wall Rim back, and then worked our way into 140 Mile, and then worked our way to the south up through the Supai, and back to where we had dropped our packs.
Okay,
And that's where we
hang on a second.
camped.
I've got a question for you.
Sure.
From the keyhole, walking the Red Wall Rim east northeast, you have a drainage to your left, which is the keyhole arm of 140 Mile. And then you make a little turn on a corner and you start going south, more or less, following the main 140 Mile arm, also now on your left.
Right.
Where you made that turn in that corner, it looks like that nose from the bottom might go.
Oh, really? Interesting.
But from the
Huh.
top, I bet you wouldn't see it at all.
Well, we certainly had no idea
Okay.
that would go down, you
Oh,
know.
all right.
And I didn't make any notes or no recollections when I was through there with Doug Rickard in 76, I guess it was, on that river trip. You know, we did that late in the day. I remember that side hike, so we were kind of flying to get
Booking,
back to the boats before dark, but I didn't make any notes in my mind that there were possibilities there. So yeah, well, you've probably got you're probably onto something there.
I don't know. I looked at it. It looked like it would be challenging, but it's like, well, let's just walk up there. But I didn't have the time. I was like, well, I'm going to just stay and go up 140 mile to the east a little bit there. And it's gorgeous water in there, and you come
Oh,
to this wonderful waterfall that's only 50, 60 feet high, but that's it. That's the end of the show right there.
yeah.
But otherwise, you're really close to the top of the Red Wall. You're sort of salivatingly close.
Yeah.
I was like,
Well, we never went back and went down 140. We went down some of the others that we'll
Okay.
talk about in later trips. But
Okay.
I know Art and I, we still one of the trips that we want to do is go back out there and do that drop in 140 mile and go down to the river there. So that would be fun, a fun thing to pull out. And we could potentially, I mean, we've talked about this, and we could, the idea was that maybe we could do a repeat our Fossil Canyon descent, right? And complete that to the river too, right? So just gotta find the time, man. Gotta find the time.
Nice. So you got
So yeah.
back to your packs and after a day out to the bridge. Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so at that point, I mentioned, the comet Hale-Bopp was particularly, well, it wasn't supposed to be such a big deal, right? But I think the Halley's Comet had been a couple of years before, and when I was a kid, we always learned about Halley's Comet and how it was such a spectacular thing when it had gone through in 1926 or something like that. And I remember when it came around in the 90s, I forget what year it was, but it was a disappointment, for me. And so I expected a lot more, right? And this Hale-Bopp kind of delivered, and that was cool. Of course, it's great if you're going to be anywhere to look at a comet, be in the Grand Canyon on the Esplanade, west of Great Thumb
Where
Mesa,
there's like zero light pollution.
Exactly. And just brilliant starscapes. And so
Nice.
we had a view of this comet for several nights running that was just spectacular,
Super.
And it was really, really exciting. So, so the next day was going to be kind of our most farthest away day, the most distant walking.
Okay.
And Art and I decided to do a day hike over into Olo Canyon. So we basically left our gear at that spot. I don't remember what Bruce did for the day, but he would have stayed around camp. Maybe he poked around and went down 140 mile or whatever. But Bruce has plenty to keep him occupied. He would sometimes bring a radio. Not, and I don't mean like a transistor or FM radio or something like that. He would bring a little ham radio,
Oh, wow.
and he would make these
Really?
super lightweight, super
Wow.
tiny radio setups, and then
Huh.
he would, bring them down into the Grand Canyon, and then set up an antenna, and then try and connect with other ham radio
Wow.
operators elsewhere in the world, you
Well,
know?
that's amazing, huh?
Yeah, incredible. I'm not sure he still does that, but he'd do that periodically in the old days. And you know, he'd sometimes connect with people in Taiwan or whatever, you know. It was
Wow.
really, really something. So he always had something to keep himself busy, for sure. So, so yeah, Art and I decided we're going to do this heavy-duty day hike. And so we kind of reversed the route that we had done the day before along the Esplanade, heading out to the neck between Olo and 140 Mile. And then we kept going, following the Esplanade to the south into Olo Canyon.
Okay.
And so at that point then, it's a fairly easy walk down Olo to the top of the Red Wall.
Right.
And so we just, you know, did that hike and hung out there and relaxed. And then we hiked down to the Sinala Fault. And the idea was we'd hike up the fault then to get back to the Esplanade.
Right.
To where
Good
we had
thinking.
Yeah. gone to where we had gone down the day before into 140 miles. So I remember, though, that from walking the rim of Olo, the Red Wall rim of Olo, you know, you've got this gash there, and we could see that there was like a 100-foot drop
right.
To get a rappel that you'd have to do to get down into the bed. But, you know, Olo looks pretty sere, and I'm not sure, because it's so dramatic, a cleft, you know, the Red Wall chasm.
Right.
It just, I remember thinking that it looked really sparse in there and very deserty, you know, and not, wasn't much grass. In a lot of these places, there's natural grass, you know, especially on the Supai ledges. But Olo seemed like it was just kind of a very dry canyon, you know, until we turn the corner and we get into the Sinala Fault Ravine, the Sinala Fault drainage,
right? Right.
And there were cottonwoods,
yep.
you know, and
Springs,
and willows.
Running water.
I mean, not dozens of cottonwoods, but
yeah.
there was, and maybe not the, you know, 150-foot majestic ones you have in Nankweep or anything like that, but you know, real trees in there, you know, with shade on their leaves and you know there's water there, right?
Right.
So and then we just entered this like fairyland of
nice.
Garden glades, you know.
Oh, gosh.
It was just unbelievable just, you know, the trickling sound of the water, right, as it's running over the limestone edges. This was at the top of the limestone. Just really a fantastic little Eden in there.
Nice.
And I remember we found right at the top of the limestone, there was a big pool and maybe 4 or 5 feet deep. And Art, you know, he said, I'm going to cool off. So he stripped down and got in this pool. Before he got in, we could see there were these little frogs, right, perched on the edge of the pool. And, of course, they got a beautiful spot, right? There's water coming down the slab into the pool, and they're right at the edge of the pool, and water's going over the lip of the pool carrying insects and whatnot. And so I remember watching this as Art gets in the pool, and, of course, his body mass displaces all this water and flushes all these frogs
over the edge.
Well, this... It wasn't like the edge of a 150-foot drop
right.
in the Red Wall or anything
right.
like that. It was just, you know, it definitely, they were surprised as hell to to see the great Noachian flood coming down here. And,
right,
and,
washing them off to the next pool.
Yeah, yeah, really. But, you know, again, so, I mean, it was a fairly easy, straightforward walk, although long, back to our camp. But you know, it was just like, you can't believe the delights that are to be found in this area, you know, and of course everywhere you go on the Esplanade, you know, you find the mezcal pits,
right?
You find the points,
right?
You find the pot shards, you know, and it's just like, you know, it's just such a splendid place to hang out, and again, you know, we talk about doing these backpack trips, but most of the time it's just day hiking, you know,
right?
So I mean, we can talk later if we ever get to it about Art and I putting together a trip around Powell Plateau at the Esplanade level, and we kind of refer to it as the 80-mile day hike, right? Because
Yeah.
that's kind of what it was, right? It's a very relatively short geographic distance. I mean, it's probably like 20 miles or so, maybe 25 miles. But by the time you do all the side hiking, on a day, during the day,
Right.
it
It adds
really
up. Yeah.
adds up the miles. So,
Yeah.
yeah. So that would just turn out to be such a fantastic trip. So at that point, we actually could. There's a route up to the rim, west of Great Thumb, that comes right up from where we camped, and it's
And you guys had
straight
come down
south.
that route when you had walked around to Supai, is that right? Or you guys had come down that route and you had walked around out there the year before, right? You had been out there, out that 140-mile route.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah, that's right, for sure. Yeah, so we yeah, this was not new, for sure.
Right.
And so that yeah, that was our exit. I'm pretty sure that we'd been up there before. So that, quite honestly, Tom, you can't you can't necessarily remember exactly when you did these things first,
Right.
right? So
And then you've got a long ways to go. Once you get up to the top of the Kaibab limestone, you've got quite a ways to go overland on the little Jeep trail or the deer trail, back to Art's Subaru, which
Oh yeah.
is
Yeah, that was like
way south.
12 miles or something like that, But it was just like that's a few hours of walking, right? It's quite enjoyable. It's all flat basically, and you got the pinyon juniper there and the fantastic views, right? And there's that ruin. Where is that ruin exactly? It's an ice it's a supposedly a defensive ruin on a big block of detached kaibab.
That's right.
And I forget exactly where that is.
It's out by the top of the route.
Yeah, I guess it's by that cave benchmark where the other route goes down. In any event, we I remember stopping there and running around on that and checking that out. But just having just a great time and relaxing
Nice.
and taking it easy, right? And so it's a long way to walk, but as we've talked about before, by the time you get at to the end of these trips, you're in great shape, right? The time passes really quickly, and of course you don't have any food left, right? Because you've
Right.
eaten it all. At that point, you're on the home stretch. You don't have to carry much water, so you're down to a 12-pound pack, right? And or maybe a little bit more if you have a rope or two. But yeah, it goes straight forward. So we had a pleasant ending to the trip for sure.
Nice and an uneventful drive out.
Yeah. Well, as far as I remember, I can't recall any incidents with that. So yeah, I've never really had any serious problems with vehicles, in pretty much any of my hiking that I can recall, anyways.
That's a sharp little road, and you can have stone breaks on your tires out there where it'll just cut the sidewall of the tire, and that's it. The tire just immediately goes flat, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I could see that for sure, for sure. I mean, we've run into people I remember who've had problems, and we've helped them, but I don't think it's ever
Yeah,
happened to us.
good.
So yeah, keep my fingers crossed. So
Cool.
yeah, so that was again, one of these kind of an eye-opening experience, and really impressed upon us what's to be had out there, with proper planning and going at the right time of year, right in the right year. And I wouldn't go out there like in a dry spring, because you can't count on the water at that point. So
Right, that's right. That's right. Very
yeah.
difficult. If the spring rains aren't coming in and it's been a dry winter, or the monsoons don't show up, it can be very dry out there.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Great. Well, maybe this is a good place to put a comma in this interview series. We've been talking for about an hour, and we could pick it up again in the fall of 97. Is that, I'm trying to, unless you, did you
Yeah.
guys hike that summer? What's up next
Yeah.
for us?
Yeah, in fact, I wanted to bring something to your attention because it occurred to me after we spoke last week that I told you about my solo hike out to Butchert Butte and
Right.
climb of Butchert Butte. Of course,
Right.
it wasn't named Butchert Butte at that when I did it,
That's right.
but that became the motivation for me to get that butte named after Harvey. I told you about that trip, and that actually took place in the summer in July of '97. So after the big trip
Oh.
that you and I have just talked about. So I don't
Okay.
know how I got that mixed up in the chronology, but certainly that trip happened in July, and then in the fall of '97, we did plan another trip, and this was a big one, 12-day trip around Powell Plateau at water level, at river level. So
Okay.
that's a really a big one too. And again, nothing that anybody hadn't done, but we did a lot of side exploration that was pretty exciting. So
Nice.
so that would be in the fall, and you can see. Maybe you can see a pattern here, like spring trip, fall trip, spring trip, fall trip.
Pretty nice. The
Yeah.
majority of Grand Canyon hikers make a camel's double hump of visitation to the park in the spring is the top of the first hump, and in the fall is the top of the second hump.
There you go. There you
And
go.
that you guys figured that out, so that's good.
Ah.
Cool. Well, with that, let's conclude part 12 of Grand Canyon Oral History with Jim Haggard. Today is Sunday, May 2nd, 2021. And Jim, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Tom, for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.